On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers has granted more than 260 pardons to people with felony charges since restoring the governor's Pardon Advisory Board in 2019. One of them this year is Anthony Cooper of Madison. PBS Wisconsin profiled his life then and now.
It's almost a restart on life, a restart of me trying to explain and trying to convince people that, hey, that's who I was at 1920 or, you know, 21, 22 is not the same person who I am today.
Should convicted felons who have turned their lives around be given a second chance? We're looking at the political history of pardons with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter and co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good morning. Merv Seymour is with us as well, a special projects journalist with PBS Wisconsin. Merv, hello.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having us on.
Good morning. Let's start with you, Merv. You explored Governor Evers' renewal of the pardon power and really digging into the life of Anthony Cooper Sr. Can you tell us a bit about Anthony?
Well, Anthony's a guy that I randomly chose after looking at a long list of people who had received pardons this year. And he was convicted of three felonies associated with drug trafficking. He was selling heroin, and he served about 3 years in state prison and really turned his life around in terms of what he committed himself to. So now he runs a prison reentry program for the Nehemiah Center. He runs an organization called Focus Interruption, which helps people in the Madison area deal with the trauma from violence, gun violence, and violence in general. And really a guy that hasn't, you know, he had that one bump in the road and hasn't been in trouble since. And he applied for his pardon in 2019 and received it in 2021. And, you know, he's a glowing example of, you know, for the governor and his program in terms of what a person can accomplish, regardless of whether they have a felony on their record or not.
Yeah, that one bump in the road, as you say. I mean, this was convicted in 1999, and then a pardon coming, you know, a long time after that. What did he make of this experience?
Well, the thing is, his story is, you know, you can listen to these folks as they apply for these pardons on the Wisconsin Eye Network monthly, and they all really are very similar in terms of telling a story of something that happened a really long time ago. You know, 7 years, 10 years, 20 years, sometimes even 30, even longer. You know, it's redemption for him and other people that receive a pardon, and they really want to have the stigma removed of having this on their record. And I think, you know, for Anthony in particular, he was really inspired by his kids. He was really, I think, you know, embarrassed that he, you know, did these things, and he really was inspired to show his kids that, you know, you can make a mistake, and you can also do the best you can to make it right. And he really didn't want his kids to follow his lead. He was really hurt by, you know, having them visit him in prison over these years. But he was very open with them in terms of just being honest about the mistake he made. So I think he and others, they see it as just literally redemption, which is what the governor intends it to be as well.
Laurel, put this into context for us, the number of pardons that Governor Evers has granted and how that compares to history.
So that's a really interesting question, Kate, because this has varied over time. One of the things that I looked into specifically in my story was kind of the politics of pardons. So we looked at Democratic governors, Republican governors, how pardons have looked over the past several decades in Wisconsin. And I think kind of the headline there is Governor Evers has issued a lot of pardons. You mentioned earlier, it's more than 250 now, I think maybe even north of 260 now. And in comparison with what some other governors have done prior to him, that's a large number for the amount of time that he's been working. He's been issuing pardons for about 2 years. So you look at, say, Governor Jim Doyle. He was a Democratic governor before Scott Walker was in office. He was in office from 2003 to 2011. Obviously bigger chunk of time than 2 years. He issued 293 pardons in that time. And he was the most of any governor, of any recent governor. So Governor Evers is already kind of nipping on the heels of Governor Doyle, and Governor Doyle had a lot more time in office to issue these pardons. Other folks, you know, we've got former Governor Tommy Thompson. We talk about him a lot these days because he's obviously still very involved in the Wisconsin political ecosystem. Between 1987 and 2001, he issued 238. Governor Scott McCallum, another Republican, only issued 24. And then at the very end of the spectrum, we have our most recent former governor, Governor Scott Walker, who didn't issue any pardons at all, which was, a real stark choice, obviously, and something that a lot of folks focused on during his administration.
We're talking with Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, Merv Seymour, special projects journalist with PBS Wisconsin, as we explore the governor's ability to grant pardons and how Governor Evers has approached it. With your questions as well about pardons, 800-642-1234. Now, Laurel, a federal pardon is an action handed down by the president that wipes the punishment for a federal crime. Can you explain how a pardon at the state level by the governor is different?
So I think that's a really important distinction. The pardons that the governor of Wisconsin issues are for state crimes that are convicted in state court. So there isn't any overlap between, you know, what the president can pardon and what a governor can pardon. And sometimes that becomes a pretty big issue. One of the things that I looked into when I was researching the political history of pardons in Wisconsin and kind of the conversation about that is the really high profile conversation about the potential pardon of Stephen Avery in Wisconsin. For folks that aren't familiar with Stephen Avery, he was made famous by a Netflix documentary called Making a Murderer. And kind of the premise of the documentary was that he may have not been guilty of the crime that he was convicted of committing in the courts. And so thousands of folks actually signed a petition for both Barack Obama, who was president at the time, and Scott Walker, the governor, to pardon Stephen Avery. And Obama's administration basically said, we can't do that. It's a state issue. It's a state, they have jurisdiction over this. And Scott Walker said, he had that, he halted the pardon program. He had objections to issuing pardons. So it was a no-go for him. And that was a real kind of, it was a way to highlight, really, Walker's pushback and the fact that he didn't issue any pardons and kind of why he didn't issue pardons.
Merv, what is the process like for getting a pardon from Governor Evers?
It's pretty straightforward in terms of the application process. You pull the documents up and they pretty much ask you to explain what you've done. They ask you to speak of, how have you changed? And a lot of it is really what they look at is really based on, again, have you had any reoffenses since your, last conviction, and really, nonviolent types of crimes are tend to have a better chance to receive a pardon. It's a lot of drug related things. And I think it's important too. Laurel talked about this, this huge explosion of pardons by the Governor Evers. And, he's during our interview, he spoke to just how policing has changed over the years. And and we're evolving, in this world. And so how drug crimes are being treated, how marijuana charges are being treated is a little different, a lot different than maybe it was, 20, 25 years ago, 10 years ago. And so he thinks about that, I guess, in terms of, you know, when he's making some of these decisions. But it can, you know, it can take anywhere from usually it's a year and a half to 2 years to even step before the pardon advisory board.
And let's pause there with the pardon advisory board as we discuss the political issues of the pardon process with Merv Seymour at PBS Wisconsin and WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White. Have you been pardoned of a crime in Wisconsin? How hard was it to get your case heard, and what difference has it made? Do you think that the governor should have the power to pardon people? Join in 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the history of political pardons on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Pardons are issued to people who have completed their prison sentences for a felony conviction at least 5 years ago and taken significant steps to turn their lives around and give back to their communities. Governor Evers has issued hundreds in his first term, telling PBS Wisconsin,
"I review every single one that's recommended to me. It is one of the most heartwarming exercise that I go through as governor."
Do you think that the governor should have the power to pardon people? 800-642-1234. We have PBS Wisconsin's Merv Seymour and WPR's Laurel White. They've been reporting on pardons, and stay with us. Laurel, the governor's 8-member pardon advisory board, has that given any impetus to Evers to grant more pardons? What do you make of the board?
The board is a really important part of the process. When I interviewed a national expert on clemency, his name is Mark Osler. He works at the University of St. Thomas, and he's been working on this issue for decades. And he talked about the importance of pardon boards across the country in kind of encouraging a larger number of pardons. He said states that have these kind of advisory boards for the executive to work with tend to issue more. He said states in the South have a lot of these boards. And really interestingly, states in the South have issued a lot of pardons historically, just several hundred a year. We're talking, you know, 700, 800 individually, some of these states. So the reason that he said that he thinks those boards are important is it kind of runs the pardon through the applications through a filter, a process. You've got a number of people evaluating, they have public meetings, they talk about it, and then they send recommendations to the executive. So it's not just the executive making sort of a unilateral decision. There isn't the appearance of that. And that can kind of soften, in a way, this executive power, because if, you know, something were to go wrong, so you pardon someone, they commit another crime, which is a political risk that these executives take. There's another entity that's involved in the process. You know, there was a recommendation that came from a board.
You have the full backing of the board in a way. Yeah,
exactly. So that's kind of part of the process.
Is there any really clear answer why Governor Walker refused to grant pardons?
Well, he said he didn't want to interfere in the judicial process. He said that he didn't think it was his role to step in and overturn the decisions of a court. He said he trusted that. He said, that's not why I ran for office. That's not why I got into this job. And I just don't really feel like that's my role. And he was very, very consistent about that, you know, over his two terms. And as I mentioned before, there was some pretty substantial pushback from folks. And he just said, you know, nope, I've drawn a line in the sand on this, and I'm not going to do it.
Merv, can you elaborate on the governor's thinking about pardons and what a governor's pardon allows you to do?
Well, I think for the governor, it's a philosophical issue. You know, in my report, he talks about how his parents were in the healthcare field and they gave people second chances, you know, in life through the services they provided as health clinicians. And for him, he sees this as an opportunity to provide a second chance in life spiritually for people by giving them, you know, a chance to move on from these felonies. And really, you know, a felony on your record you know, it doesn't matter, you know, if you drove through a cornfield and did X amount of damage to the property or whatever, it, you know, whatever it might be, it's going to impact your chance to get certain kinds of jobs, mm-hmm. To get certain or housing in certain, you know, neighborhoods and communities. And so it has a really big impact on that. I have a friend who just happened to, I'm looking at some of the applications online, and I saw someone that I knew, and I reached out to, you know, this friend of mine, and I didn't even know that he, you know, had this situation that from 25 years ago. But he is interested in getting into real estate in the state of Florida. But you can't have a felony on your on there and do that. And so for him, you know, receiving a pardon would allow him to be able to pursue a career in real estate. So, by getting the pardon, it does open a lot of doors and create more opportunities. And the governor also has a sense of, he says he doesn't want to throw anyone away. And he spoke in detail about just lots, you know, different people with felonies that are contributing to the state of Wisconsin. And he thinks that's really important. And he knows it's a political risk and potentially someone, you know, might slip up. But he feels really comfortable that the people that they've granted pardons to are on the right track and on the right track for the, you know, for good.
We're talking with Merv Seymour, who is a special projects journalist with PBS Wisconsin. Laurel White is here, WPR State Capitol reporter, as we discuss the history of political pardons and how Governor Evers approaches them today. With your thoughts and questions on pardons, 800-642-1234. Jim is joining us from Juneau. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call. So, like the story with a lot of us, I was made some serious mistakes in my youth. Haven't had any problems since. But my thing was outside of the state, Virginia. Anyways, I was wondering, is there any help to be gotten through this program to kind of, with a request to the Virginia Probation and Parole Department or whatever department controls the pardons to help get a pardon from my crime back in the 80s.
Jim, thank you. And Laurel, I'm going to toss this to you. Is there any help within Wisconsin, you know, to get a request from a different state to be on track for a pardon and an application?
That's a really good question. And honestly, not one that I know the answer to. I think, you know, reaching out to the Pardon Advisory Board and kind of the administrative folks around that might be able to point you in the right direction. But I don't know if there is a set process for helping folks that had issues outside of Wisconsin in previous years.
Yeah, easily could be a state-by-state process, every state right. doing it a little bit differently, every governor taking a different approach as we've been learning. Are there limits, Laurel, or qualifications in Wisconsin law on the number of people the governor can pardon?
There aren't. There are no limits. And that's kind of what we're seeing with Governor Evers going at this faster clip than other governors. There really isn't anything limiting him other than time, you know, yeah. the time that he has in office and how quickly the board can process applications, have hearings. They have publicly streamed hearings to go through these applications, and they've got a lot of them to go through. So it's not as Merv mentioned before, it's not a quick process, but they're certainly moving pretty quickly over the past 2 years to approve more than 250. So we've got certainly more time in Governor Evers' first term. It'll be interesting to see how many more they accomplish in that time.
Let's go to Jesse in Green Bay. Jesse, hi. What's your question about pardons?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, let's say the person would have caught a federal case. Can he still get a pardon from the Wisconsin state, even though it's a federal case?
Laurel, go ahead.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, there's no, for folks looking for a federal pardon from the state of Wisconsin, there's just no avenue there. If you want a federal pardon, you've got to go to the president. You've got to go to that executive. Only state cases for the governor of Wisconsin.
Merv, we only have a few seconds left, but what difference can a pardon make in someone's life?
Well, I think it's, you know, you take a case like Mr. Cooper's case, and it's really peace of mind, you know, an opportunity, and all the different kinds of opportunities it's going to open the door for. And, you know, and speaking to your the first caller you that called in asking about other states, and again, that's, it's going to vary by state by state. But there is an organization out of Milwaukee called the Milwaukee Justice Center, and another one called the Expungement Pardon Clinic, and they offer legal help to people in Wisconsin. So, you know, those folks over there might have an answer about what goes on in other states. So I would encourage your first caller to reach out.
Thank you for that suggestion. Yes. And thank you both for joining us. Merv Seymour with PBS Wisconsin, Laurel White, WPR State Capitol Reporter. News is next here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to first-term Democratic State Representative Sarah Rodriguez. Her district includes parts of Brookfield, Elm Grove, West Allis, Wauwatosa, and Milwaukee. She is a registered nurse by training, a healthcare executive, formerly managed health plan operations and integrative care for Advocate Aurora Health. We'll start with the politics of the pandemic. Do you live in Waukesha County? What do you want lawmakers to know? What should state government do next in pandemic response? It's 800-642-1234. State Representative Sarah Rodriguez, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. You've worked in a variety of roles in public health at the local, state, federal levels. What has Wisconsin done right in its response to the pandemic?
You know, under Governor Evers' leadership, Wisconsin has been a leader in getting shots in arms, particularly early on in the pandemic and bouncing back from COVID-19. Unfortunately, our Republican-controlled legislature has done everything in their power to undermine our public health professionals, medical professionals, and our healthcare heroes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, they've really tried to block Governor Evers from implementing some common sense solutions. You know, as a state representative, registered nurse, and former epidemic intelligence service officer, you know, I know about using science to make database decisions to keep our community safe through common sense legislation. I find it unfortunate that the GOP-controlled legislature continues to place politics before people's lives and their livelihoods by undermining medical professionals and our healthcare heroes. You know, we've lost too many Wisconsinites and too much time to this virus. And I wanna make sure that we continue to move forward in Wisconsin.
I wanna ask you about masking, because we saw Milwaukee's health commissioner last week saying that she's not planning to reinstate the mask mandate, saying that it won't slow the pandemic. Where do you come down on the masking situation and mandates to wear them?
So we know what works to stop this pandemic. We know that we need to get more shots in arms. We need to get people vaccinated. And we do know that masking does work in terms of transmission. So if anybody is out there and has not been vaccinated yet, and I know you have concerns, I really encourage you to talk to your primary care provider. They're the ones that can walk you through, you know, how safe and effective this vaccine is. And I just really encourage everyone to have those conversations.
So as you look at the numbers now, should people be wearing masks in public?
So right now, that's what the CDC recommends, is that we do wear masks in public, particularly when we're in situations where we don't know the vaccination status of others that are around us. I wear a mask when I go to the store. My children wear a mask at school. And so that's the CDC guidance at the moment.
The governor has the power to direct where more than $4.5 billion in federal pandemic relief funds will go. And these are funds that will continue to be dispensed for years from now. Should lawmakers have a say in how this money is spent and the priorities for it?
Well, lawmakers do have a say in how this money is spent. Governor Evers' line is open and they can call him and talk to him about priorities for their district. And I encourage them to do so.
So do you feel like there is, you know, as you are a first term, what is it like for you in the legislature? Because we know that Republicans and Democrats have had communication breakdown and that there is not a spirit of bipartisanship.
You know, I wish there was a spirit of bipartisanship. You know, I live in Waukesha County. I live in Brookfield. It is the most conservative part of my district. And I live next to Republicans. I work with Republicans. I have family members who are Republicans. And we have good, solid, respectful policy-based discussions. And I wish we could do that within the legislature. But the way that we do that moving forward, honestly, is fair maps. You know, as we look forward, if we have these gerrymandered maps where people are in very safe districts, they don't have a reason to work across the aisle, and they don't have a reason to listen to the larger constituency in Wisconsin. And so if we can get fair maps in Wisconsin for the next 10 years, I think you would see that bipartisanship really increasing within the assembly.
I'm going to get to maps and redistricting in just a moment here. Let me reintroduce you. We're talking with Sarah Rodriguez, represents the 13th district in the assembly, and she is from Brookfield, also represents other parts of Waukesha County, was elected last year. You can join in. Do you live in the county? What priorities do you think the state legislature should take up next? What do you think the state government should do next about the pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234. You're also a nurse. What is your perspective on the pandemic, having worked on the front lines of healthcare yourself?
I am, you know, as a nurse, I feel so much for those nurses that are working today. I still have friends within the hospital system who, you know, work, and old colleagues that work within the front lines. They are exhausted. They're exhausted. And we need to do more to support them. And the best thing we can do to support those frontline workers is to get vaccinated. That's what they're seeing every day. It's people who are unvaccinated being hospitalized and oftentimes in the ICU and very, very sick. And so this is what I would really encourage folks to do, is to get vaccinated so we can take some of this pressure off of our frontline healthcare workers.
There's also certainly been a shortage of healthcare professionals, and we've seen, you know, signing bonuses for nurses, other ways to attract people to the profession. What can the state do to make sure that there are enough nurses to cover the shifts?
So that's a great question. I think the hospital systems are doing what they need to do in terms of trying to attract nurses to the profession. The Governor Evers actually had dollars within his budget to be able to train more teachers for nurses, which is one problem within Wisconsin today, is that we simply don't have enough nursing professors to teach the people who want to become nurses. We can also do more to encourage maybe non-traditional areas to pursue nursing as we move forward, and really talk about it as a career that has multiple opportunities. I think it was one of the best decisions of my life to become a nurse, and I've been able to do so many things within this profession that I would recommend it to everyone.
I want to get your sense as to how testing is operating in Wisconsin. I mean, early in the pandemic, there were testing sites in many different locations. How is testing where you are in Waukesha County, and what you're seeing across Wisconsin?
So right now, our testing capacity is where it needs to be within Waukesha County. You know, it's very easy to find testing sites at this point, whether you can set an appointment up through your local pharmacy like Walgreens, or there are other places where our local health departments, particularly Waukesha County, list places where you can get tests for COVID. And if anybody has an exposure or is worried about COVID, I encourage you to get tested right away.
And in terms of contact tracing, do you find that there are enough contact tracers to be able to isolate and find someone who has been exposed?
So depending on what you look at, we're either last or close to last in our public health funding within Wisconsin. So although our contact tracers are doing the best that they can, and right now they're saying they're getting to people, if we have more people that are sick with COVID, they also work on other reportable diseases. We really need to fully fund our public health department so that we can prepare for the next pandemic.
Is that where you might say that Wisconsin has faltered in the pandemic, not putting enough emphasis on public health and boosting those departments?
Preparation is always key. We want to prepare before we have a crisis like we've had with COVID-19. And so although I hate to tell your listeners this, this will not be our last pandemic. I hope it is the last one in my lifetime, but it will not be our last pandemic. And we need to do more to prepare ourselves as we move forward so that we can adequately contact trace and call people when we have something like this happen again.
So talk a little bit more there. How could we adequately, adequately prioritize public health? What would that look like in Wisconsin?
It would require more funding. It is simply more funding to be able to hire more people to be able to adequately cover the communities that we have. And, the Governor Evers has put considerable amount of funding within public health within his budget. Unfortunately, some of that was cut back when the final budget was signed. And so really reaching out to your state legislators to say, hey, we need more funding in public health. We want to be able to prepare for the next crisis and make sure that we keep those dollars within the budget.
President Biden has announced the vaccine mandate for companies with 100 or more employees. And here in Wisconsin, the legislature passed a bill that the governor ultimately vetoed that would have prohibited public health officials from requiring people to get a COVID shot. Where do you stand on vaccine mandates?
So I'm a nurse, and I've worked in different healthcare settings my entire professional life. And these types of requirements are not new for many professions. I've been required to get vaccines across my entire career. And I think that we should not take tools out of the toolbox, especially for businesses and especially for healthcare organizations. We need to make sure they have the tools to protect the most vulnerable members of our community. Individuals are coming in sick to hospital systems and clinics. And we certainly don't want to have anybody come in without COVID and leave the hospital with COVID. That would be a tragedy. And so we have to make sure that we have all the tools in the toolboxes for our business community.
We're talking with Democratic Representative Sarah Rodriguez of Brookfield in Waukesha County. What are topics and issues that could bridge the political divide and receive bipartisan support from both parties? How do you think a first-term assembly person should navigate the legislature? What do you think about redistricting? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Representative Sarah Rodriguez here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with first-term Democratic Representative Sarah Rodriguez of Brookfield, who brings a healthcare administration background to the Capitol, is a registered nurse by training. We're discussing her priorities in office, talking about the pandemic. Moving on to voting, what questions do you have about redistricting? Do you think Wisconsin should institute ranked choice voting? Join in 800-642-1234. Representative Rodriguez is with us for about 10 more minutes. Representative, there is this battle underway, as you know, in Wisconsin over drawing the next decade's political maps. How would you like to see the redistricting process move forward and unfold?
Well, I was the author of Assembly Bill 395, which is a nonpartisan redistricting bill. So I know that most Wisconsinites are really in favor of nonpartisan redistricting. They've been clear that they want fair maps. In fact, 55 counties have passed resolutions supporting fair maps, and voters in 32 counties have passed referendums supporting fair maps. So we're going to have new district lines that will impact our state for the next 10 years. So it's critically important that lawmakers get it right, and that the people of Wisconsin get fair maps at the end of the process. It shouldn't be about us as legislators. It should be about the people of Wisconsin being able to choose their elected officials and being able to hold their legislators accountable.
So how would you define what is a fair map?
So a fair map, there's the People's Maps Commission maps that the Governor Evers has sponsored, which has a bipartisan Republicans and Democrats on that particular commission. And what they're doing is really looking at making sure that there are communities of interest together. And if we have fair maps, we're going to have a lot more communities within Wisconsin that will be purple communities, like my district is, as opposed to being either bright red or bright blue. And as we move forward with that, that's going to allow us to really have more bipartisanship. It's going to make sure that we work together to meet the needs of Wisconsinites.
So with a divided government this year, though, the expectation perhaps is a court will have to ultimately draw the maps. How do you feel about that?
You know, I wish we could come out with nonpartisan maps through the legislature. That would be my goal. That would be my goal. But if it's going to go to the court systems, I do hope that they take into account that we want to keep communities of interest together and that we want to have nonpartisan maps that doesn't give one party an advantage over another.
What did you see out of the work of the People's Maps Commission?
You know, I haven't taken a close look at all the maps yet, but what's most important is that Wisconsin ends up with fair maps for the next 10 years. You know, the redistricting has gotten started. There's still a long way to go, and I'm committed to fighting for fair maps for everyone within Wisconsin.
You and a number of other Democrats put forth a bill, Assembly Bill 150, that would require ranked choice voting for all federal, state, and local elections. Ranked choice voting allowing people to vote for multiple candidates in order of preference. Why do you want Wisconsin to go this route?
So ranked choice voting, I think many people have first and second choices when they're looking at their candidates. And so bringing ranked choice voting to Wisconsin offers voters more choices and fairer elections. We could ensure that the winners of elections have the support of the majority without significantly increasing costs or decreasing turnout.
Would ranked choice voting make our elections fairer, do you see?
I do think it would make our elections fairer because it gives people more input into who they want representing them. And so as we move forward, you know, as you said, I was an author of Assembly Bill 150. It has not received a hearing yet with a representative, Mark Spreitzer. And so I would hope that we would be able to put this in committee and discuss it as we move forward.
Do you see any traction for ranked choice voting, be it in the legislature or in the constituents you talk with?
Absolutely within the constituents that I talk with. Many people like the idea of ranked choice voting because it gives them more options and it makes voting fairer. And there are no spoilers in the election when we do that. There are other bills that look at a version of ranked choice voting within the assembly today that does have bipartisan support. I would love to be able to discuss those types of things and see if we can make that bill even better.
We're talking with Representative Sarah Rodriguez, represents the 13th district in this assembly. District includes parts of Brookfield, Elm Grove, West Allis, Wauwatosa, and Milwaukee. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Do you live in Waukesha County? What priorities do you think the legislature should take up next? What do you want to tell your representative? 800-642-1234. Patrick is joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Patrick. What would you like to ask?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was kind of wondering, why is Racine and Kenosha lumped in with Waukesha for the congressional district? That seems like a real stretch.
So thank you, Patrick, for your question. So the Fair Maps Commission really looked at counties first to make sure that we had the counties together. And when you're looking at the maps that we have today, they were drawn with partisanship in mind. And so they were drawn to make sure that the Republicans consistently had a majority. And that's why we're really pushing for fair maps. We don't want the Democrats to always have a majority with the maps that we get. We want it to be fair. And so that's why we want to have fair maps.
You know, the Wisconsin Elections Commission says we need maps by March. Do you think that timeline is doable?
I do think that timeline is doable. We have many maps out there today that we can all look at and look within the assembly to have some discussions on which maps are going to be put in front of us that we can vote on.
You mentioned this a little bit about your neighbors being Republican, and you're a Democrat, represent part of Waukesha County, which is known for its staunch Republican and conservative politics. How do you connect with voters?
So there are so many things that unite us across the state. We all want good health care. We all want good schools. We want our children to be safe and happy and have many opportunities in front of them. I know I want that for my own children, and the people I speak to, they want that for their children as well. They love their community. I love living in Brookfield. And so when we talk to people, there are so many areas where we agree, or we agree on the outcome, but maybe we don't agree on the path, on the way to get there. And that's the way that we can have those policy discussions. And so when I talk to people, you know, there are ways that we can move together in a bipartisan manner that really gets us where we need to go for Wisconsin.
Because you feel like we're all starting from the same sort of values?
Yes, I think Wisconsin, we love our communities. We take care of our neighbors, and we want to make sure our children thrive. And that's a place that we can start from.
In these moments we have left with you, we've talked about the pandemic. We talked about voting and redistricting. What are your legislative priorities for the rest of your first term?
So I've got three areas that I'm really interested in making sure that I move forward on. You know, healthcare, I think we need to fight for common sense healthcare reform that puts people first. You know, COVID-19 has shown us that we need to do more to protect our vulnerable communities within Wisconsin. And one of the ways that we could do that, which is a bill that I've authored with Representative Reamer, is expanding Badger Care. And that would expand Badger Care for single adults that make around approximately $17,000 a year. Number two is education. We need to fully fund our public schools so that we can invest in our children's futures, and making colleges and technical schools affordable and accessible for everyone, all Wisconsinites. And then lastly, really looking at the economy, we have one of the lowest entrepreneurship rates in the country within Wisconsin, and we need to do better in terms of being able to promote and support small businesses and helping Main Street, you know, bounce back from the COVID-19 pandemic. We need living wage jobs, union jobs, and we need lower taxes for our working families and small businesses so that they can thrive.
Representative Sarah Rodriguez, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Rodriguez represents the 13th district in the assembly, includes the city of Brookfield. Just ahead, we talk with a Milwaukee architect about how to elevate Indigenous culture and voices in the field of architecture and design. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.